you won't find them in the club, cause they are all up in the pub. They're our favorite nerds, they're the Twisted Sisters. You may like them, you may not, but you should probably give them a shot. They have the greatest words, they're the Twisted Sisters.
Hello, and welcome to our conversation. We're glad you're here. I'm Becky.
I'm Amanda.
And I'm Janet.
And we are the Twisted Sisters. So, another podcast where we don't have Callie. She is okay. She's just having to deal with some family issues. So, we have Janet Walker, Texas Ranger, on our Pub Sisters.
Hi, Janet.
Hello.
So, ladies, what are you drinking today?
I am drinking. We stopped at the grocery store the other night, and they had a really good like mix and match section. So I grabbed from Stone Brewery the I think it's pronounced Chocoveza. It's X O C O V E Z A. It's a winter spiced mocha stout.
Oh, is it Mexican?
I think it's because it's like the winter spice. I think it's inspired by that. More like Aztec. But
mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. I guess really that's what I meant.
No, I knew what you meant. so this is brewed with cocoa, coffee, peppers, vanilla, cinnamon, and nutmeg.
Oh, peppers. Is it hot? Like spicy?
It's not. Like, I've had pepper beer before. Like, mm-hmm. There's one in Duluth at Fitger's Brewery, which is my favorite brewery in Duluth, Minnesota. They have a habanero one that we got last Christmas, and it was so spicy. Oh my gosh, I could only drink like a quarter of a pint because how hot it was. But then actually we used the rest of it to like make like hot dogs, like little like brats. And that was really good.
You could put it in chili too.
So I mean, no, this is good. It's not spicy, but it has like, I don't know, it's very complex flavors. Mm. I'll have to keep drinking it, but yeah. And I had to save a little bit for Christopher because I told him he could try it.
Yes, absolutely. So what about you, Janet?
Well, I'm going to keep it a lot more tame than that, and I'll show you my little mason jar with my little spinny straw that changes color because it's an ice, but it's just ginger ale and cranberry Mio.
Oh,
yeah. Ooh, nice. So whether you have like club soda or just ginger ale, like a really just simple soda, and then I put Mio in it, and then it gives it the flavor. So mm-hmm. if you wanted alcohol, I'm sure it would be amazing, but mine's mm-hmm. just very simple tonight.
Yeah. So I'm still doing dry January, except I did take a hiatus from that for Pastards Live.
Yeah, you did.
It was quite the situation. but I had a great time, and Amanda and Christopher were there as well, and it was really exciting to see Christopher since we didn't think he was coming, because he'd broken his foot, ankle, all of that stuff. So it was really cool to see him there. So not only am I doing dry January, but you could probably hear that my voice is a little bit different. I caught a cold somehow. And so I am drinking from a huge mug. I'm pretty sure this holds a pint or so. Oh my God. Like, oh right my by gosh. My head. See, it's that big. Anyway, it is half a lemon, some ginger, fresh ginger cut up, some local honey, and with hot water poured over it. So it's my own little like concoction. So hopefully I'm on the downward slide from this cold, or upward climb, whatever, however that goes. So what are you girls fangirling about this week?
Do you want to go, Janet?
Sure. So have you heard of the show Vikings on History Channel? Oh my God.
I need to watch that.
Oh my gosh. Have you seen any of it, or are you like behind a certain season, or
we have yet to start it. Oh my gosh. So
Yes, no, you really need to. So this show is so cool. So the History Channel puts it out, and they try to make it as like historically accurate as possible. So it follows Ragnar Lothbrok and then his whole like legends and fables and how wonderful of a like warrior he is and all of the conquests he's been on and all of his sons and then his son's sons and then his wives that he's had and all the kings that he meets. So it is so cool because they'll try to make it true to the time period and their religion and like even the weapons and their style of battle. So in each conquest, like you can Google it and you'll see on Wikipedia, like what's going to happen next. So it's good in the sense that like, if you watch Game of Thrones, you kind of know that everybody's going to die, but then when it happens, you're just heartbroken because you didn't think that that person was going to die. But if you look up on Google, like you already know Ragnar's story, so you know eventually something might happen or XYZ is coming up, but then to see it on the show, it's so cool. You gotta watch it. You gotta.
Yeah. It's like Titanic. You know that the boat sinks.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And you're like, no, it sang. Everybody died and the old people were holding each other and you cry, but it's so good to see it.
Cool. That sounds great. Mm-hmm. What about you, Mona?
All right. So I'm fangirling right now. I'm sorry. I'm trying to decide because there's a couple different things that I had in my head today. And I'm blanking right now because I was laughing.
Do you want me to go instead? Yeah. And then you can
choose.
Okay. So I've gone through a few different ones. Like, even a few days ago, I was not even sure. Actually, when we were talking just the other day, I was like, oh, I don't know yet what I'm going to say. But I decided, actually, finally today, that... I'm fangirling about Pope Francis.
Oh.
I love the dude. I don't agree with him on everything. Mm-hmm. But he's been tweeting out some stuff recently about the things that are going on in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And he just seems to have his head screwed on straight about how to treat the least of these. And so how to treat refugees, how to treat the poor, how to, you know, I mean, he's a Jesuit, so I guess that makes sense. But yes, there are some things that I don't agree on, like his stance on women in ministry or his halfway stance on the LGBT community. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's more progressive on that than... any pope in recent history, in my lifetime.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, obviously I'm more progressive even than he is on that. But that's cool because it's still, he's still more progressive than the Catholic Church has been and really more progressive than the evangelical church is by far. So, I'm just really loving myself some Francis right now.
The thing about Pope Francis, like, actually Christopher and I were just talking about that like an hour and a half ago, because I think I don't think there's anything wrong with pointing out like where you disagree with him, of course, because like, and I don't think he would disagree with people disagreeing with him either, you know? And I think he wants people to be open and with each other as people of faith, regardless of where we stand, and just living the way Christ called us to live. And then that's the most important thing, and anything else comes after. And and as far as like women in ministry in the Catholic Church, like, Christopher's Catholic, and one thing he pointed out is that, no, he doesn't agree at all with the fact that women can't be priests. Like, that's definitely something that he's not on board with. He doesn't agree with that. But beyond that, like, when I've gone to like mass with him, the way I've seen women involved just within ministry in the Catholic Church or even within leadership in the Catholic Church, there's nothing that prevents them from being in leadership in the church. Don't care at all. There's nothing about women not being able to teach men or lead men. It's just they can't be priests. And so at least with that, there's actually a lot more, I think, equality, at least from what I've seen in the Catholic Church, compared to anything I ever saw in the Protestant evangelical background I personally had.
Right.
But we'll talk about them with our topic today. But yeah. And yeah. Just one other thing that people have to remember is that the Catholic Church is a worldwide organization.
Yes.
Like and Pope Francis, he is the Pope for every single Catholic in the world.
Yeah.
And you compare the Western Catholic Church to the African Catholic Church to the Asian Catholic Church.
Yeah.
There's so, like, the culture is all different, and he has to find a way to balance all of that, and he can't ignore the fact that, the like, for example, the African Catholic Church is definitely more conservative than the Western Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
And he's not just going to dismiss them because the Western Catholic Church is different, you know?
Yeah.
It's, right. Like, he has, I mean, I would never want that job. Even.
Yeah. The Nazarene Church is global too. And that has been a big issue, especially on issues of drinking and of like dancing and stuff like that. So in like, it depends on what part of the world you're in as to if you're more conservative or liberal on which subject. And so like the church is based out of the U.S. and currently all but one of the general superintendents are from the U.S. And so it's interesting because you know, in Europe, drinking is part of the culture.
Yeah.
Like, and I mean, it just is the culture. And in Africa, dancing is part of the culture. I mean, when I lived there, it was I mean, we were in the Nazarene church during our church service, we were dancing. Like that's just what you do. You sing and dance. So that's been kind of an interesting thing to balance when it comes to what do we have in the manual that covers everybody, because cultures are different, and that doesn't mean that one is wrong and the other one's right. They're just different. And so what is the thing that we can all agree on, and then the rest just say use good judgment?
I agree.
So Amanda, have you decided yet?
yes. So I was trying to decide if I should talk about Sherlock and decided I'm not going to. I'm gonna wait until later. Because I really don't want to risk spoiling it for anybody.
It is still so recently.
It's probably give that at least 6 months. So ever since we started our podcast, I've been really intentional at trying to find other podcasts with women that the podcast. And so there's a couple that I've found that actually aren't similar to ours at all. I'm loving them. One of them is the called Woman Up, and there's an exclamation point at the end. Okay. And it's two women, and I don't remember their names right now, but all they talk about is nerd culture. So they talk, they go to comic cons, anime, and video games, and then they talk about like Marvel movies, and it's just like they're so much fun to listen to. It's just, I have a blast, and I actually learn a lot from them because to a lot of like comic type stuff until the last couple of years, and I want to know more about it. I want to be able to know, okay, here's where the movies are different from the comic books, and I'm not necessarily gonna like go buy all the comic books to find that out myself because that's expensive and also don't have time right now, but it's just like I also want to, you know what to be connected at least in some way to the integrity of the stories and the canon of these movies, and just nerd culture itself. And it's just really cool hearing two women that are like, they're really, really, really involved in like Comic-Con culture from what I can tell. And they know a lot of really important people. One of them, she actually is a screenwriter. She actually worked on the most recent Star Wars movies as a screenwriter. So that's one I've been listening to. And then I also discovered She Podcasts. It's a podcast by two women, Elsie Escobar and Jessica Kupferman, and it's a podcast for women about podcasting. So it's like, there's all these resources out there that are like either not gender targeted or targeted towards men for podcasting. Mm-hmm. And they started this like 5 years ago, maybe longer. Like they've done it for a really long time because they wanted there to be out there a resource specifically for women to go to about podcasting. And they are really, really cool. And I know that they also have a community online. I can't remember what it's called right now. I'm not finding it online, but it's a community of all women podcasters, and they're like getting close to 5,000 people.
Cool.
So I had to find that information because I think you, Callie, and I should look into that. But
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that sounds great.
That's what I've been fangirling about.
Woohoo! Cool. Okay, so guilty pleasures. Does anyone have one that they want to just shout out first, or?
Sure, I'll go.
Okay.
So, have you heard of Yogants?
No.
What is that?
No.
So, I actually think Yogants is trademark. So, let me say that it's actually like yoga and dance put together.
Oh. Yeah.
So,
that sounds really fun.
Yeah. So, I'm probably almost like stalkerish side of things when it comes to Instagram. There's a couple of people that I follow, and I'm probably not going to say her name right, but Kuchira, so Kuchira. She created like the Yogants movement, and it's really more like, sure, you can do the technical part of yoga, but then when you have like music and when you have your emotion playing into it and you have like just dance moves and fun playing into it, how does it evolve into something that's more true to what you're feeling and not just poses that somebody is teaching you to do? Uh-huh. So I am all over Instagram, like looking at her feed and looking up her hashtags. And then there's also like acro yoga. So it's two people or partners most generally doing yoga together. And then like mommy baby yoga. So you'll see like a mom and like her little toddler doing yoga with her. It is the cutest thing. So I'm all over Instagram looking up as much yoga type stuff as possible, but not the traditional yoga.
Yeah,
hoping that maybe it'll give me the inspiration to actually get on the yoga mat. A little bit here and there, I'm doing some more yoga, but I think it's cool just to see that as like inspiration, that you don't have to do it perfect in a classroom. It's really, really cool.
So I've done some yoga classes back, like it hasn't been recently, but back a few years ago, I was working in a federal building and the U.S. Marshals has a gym there because they have to pass like fitness tests and such.
Yeah, yeah.
And they had a yoga class on Wednesdays at lunchtime and I'd go to that. And my dance history, so I had taken dance back around like junior high and high school time. And so my dance history allowed me to do some of the poses that some other people weren't. So dance and yoga totally go together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And sometimes if you're in a yoga class and you see like the teacher and you're kind of matching yourself to the teacher and then you feel like, well, I kind of don't want to move that way. I always thought like, well, if I don't know the pose correctly, then maybe I'm going to do it wrong. And then what if I hurt myself?
Yeah.
But even if you do the pose that the teacher is showing you, like, if it hurts, you're not going to do it. So if you feel the whatever to do a different move or do it differently, then Yogants is all about just listening to your body and then doing what feels right. And then if it's wrong, your body's going to tell you that it's wrong, and then you'll come out of that.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, I've been in the same boat that you are, Janet, trying to – it's more like getting the discipline to go to yoga.
Yeah.
Because, like, I have a gym membership – and a lot of the classes at the gym are free if you're a member. Mm-hmm. And yoga is one of those classes that's free. And it's like Mondays and Wednesdays. And I usually try to go on Wednesdays. And like ever since the holidays, I've just been having a hard time getting there. All of December and then since then, it's a hard time getting there. So I was wondering, Janet, will you be my yoga accountability partner?
Yeah. So fun.
We can, like, you know, check up on each other each week and say, hey, did you get to yoga? I'd be like, no, or yes.
Yeah, help absolutely. Each
other with that. Good things are happening on the sister podcast today.
And you're more than welcome as well, Becky. You seem a little more disciplined
than I am. I don't know about that, but I don't know. I mean, in some cases. I'm just secretive. Maybe that's what it is.
But speaking of the yoga thing, though, Christopher, and I saw this the other day, too. But Christopher pointed out to me today that there's apparently this group that do goat yoga, where you do yoga and there's like baby goats.
Really?
I know. Oh. And so like I'm like, what? And so like my dream is to someday want to be a farmer. I want to do permaculture and grow food forests and just want baby goats everywhere.
Oh.
And that would be so much fun to like have a class with the baby goats, like a yoga class. That'd be so much fun. But
that so I'm breaking the third wall here, and all of you out there in podcast land who aren't in the Pastards Pub, which you can get into if you go to patreon.com/pastordspodcast and donate $1 a month or more. If you're not in the Pastards Pub yet, you might not know that Janet loves baby animals.
Yes, I do.
And so when Amanda said baby goats, you should have seen Janet's face. It was great. But yeah, so
it's funny, Becky. I love how like every episode you find a way to like Christopher calls it your come to the pub altar call.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think my nickname might become the pub evangelist. I'm not sure. But well, you know, the thing about it is so like the thing about it is I have found a tribe of people there, and and I'm pretty sure that you all have too, and I know that there are others in the pub who have found the same. And for people out there who are somewhere in between evangelical and atheism, mm-hmm. or you're an atheist or you're like just anything where you just are not completely bought into American Christianity right now, mm-hmm. it's a safe place to mm-hmm. vent and to hear other people's stories and be able to say, oh yeah, me too, like I thought it was only me. Mm-hmm.
And really ask those questions, like whether you have a belief system or if you don't have a belief system. Mm-hmm. Regardless of any of your background or their background, you can ask all the questions you want. And you'll probably get an array of answers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's like, and it's not just like, one thing I'm finding amazing is it's not just people from the United States. Like, there's at least like 5 to 10 people that aren't from the U.S. in the public. Yeah. Not more. Like, there's a lot of people from Canada. We got someone from the Netherlands last week who joined.
Yeah.
Someone who's living in Nebraska but is from Switzerland joined last week as well. And it's just like you get people, like it's amazing because we're learning a lot from each other too, because like we all come from different places. Like, mm-hmm. like I just think it's hilarious the conversation we had. Oh, and then of course there's someone from Australia. But like last week we had the conversation where one of the turds from Canada, she's like, okay, what's the deal with people wearing shoes in their houses? You know, we had like, there was like 80 comments on that post of people saying, oh yes, we do, or no, we don't wear shoes in our houses. And it's like, it's all over the place. It was just really fun.
Yeah. And exactly. And the thing about it was, is that there was not one American answer to that. It was really kind of weird. We all had like kind of a different answer to it. So yeah. And then we also don't forget our one Irishman too.
Oh yeah.
he's a big contributor, and if you listen to the Pastards Live episode, that was him at the end of it.
That was so
Ian's
funny.
Pretty awesome. Yeah. So funny. So Amanda, like have you given your I've lost track now.
Okay. All right, so my guilty pleasure today is today actually for the first time ever I downloaded Snapchat on my phone. So the reason I did it, so my almost all of my siblings live in Mexico. Mm-hmm. my sister Alicia, she has special needs, she lives in Duluth with my mom, but my other siblings, okay, so I'm the oldest of 5 kids, and I also have 3 step siblings. Mm-hmm. My stepsister Perry lives in Australia, and my stepbrother Parker lives in Arizona, but my stepbrother Sam, my brother Josue, my sister Esperanza, my brother Eliseo all live in Mexico because mm-hmm. my siblings teach at a school there. So like we don't get to talk very often, but my sister's been sending me like these funny videos of like filters applied. And today she sent me one. It was like a Harry Potter one. It looks like you have like the Harry Potter glasses and a scar like mm-hmm. on your forehead.
Ew, fun.
And then a wand and like all these like acceptance letters rained down on me. So I'm like, nice. Okay, that did it. That convinced me. Like once I found out it was Snapchat, I was like, okay, I'm gonna download it now. So I might be posting videos on the pub soon.
Hey, bring them on.
I was just like, I told my sister, I was like, I'm going to be wasting so much time on this now.
Yeah, I've determined I'm too old for Snapchat. So, like, my sister, who is almost 3 years younger than me, has Snapchat. And she's a little bit older than you, Amanda. She's in between us in age. But
yeah,
She has Snapchat on her phone only because of my niece and nephew. Like my niece loves it, Devin, and she's like, "Oh, mom, can I have your phone? So I can do some Snapchat filters?" I'm like, okay.
Yeah. So yeah, my siblings that are in Mexico are all quite a bit younger than I am. My sister is 21.
And, oh yeah, yeah. Okay.
My brothers are 21 and 22, and then my youngest, so the two older brothers, they're 21, 22, and then my youngest brother, Eliseo, he's 17. So they're all quite but it's just fun because like my sister, I miss all my family, but she and I, like, there's just something about a sister.
Absolutely. I have sisters, so like the only brothers I have are my brothers-in-law. But it's just not the same.
Oh,
but,
okay, yeah.
I just have the two sisters.
Yeah, and I miss them all so much. But like my sister, so I'm 9 years older than she is, and mm-hmm. I really couldn't stand her when she was really little because she was really super annoying. one time she like did one of those things where she knew my mom was distracted, like balancing the checkbook, and my mom would say yes to anything she asked, and so she went to my mom. Mm-hmm. She's like, "Mom, was I born? First, and I was like, "Yeah, you were born first." So then ran off. She came to tell me, "Mom," or she said, "Mom told me that I was born first. So I'm the most important because I was born first." I'm like, you are not born first. I'm 9 years older than you. It doesn't make any sense.
That's not how that works.
Yeah, sure, okay, honey. Whatever.
Oh, she was just so frustrating. But like one day, so my sister Lisa has special needs. I'm sorry, this is kind of a tangent, but I'm feeling nostalgic with my family right now. But my sister, Alicia, has special needs, and she's 4 years younger than me. But, like, we can't have that kind of sister relationship just because of her development. She's 25
she's
now.
She's not able to. Yeah.
Yeah, no, she's 25 now, and she's somewhere between 5 and 8 years old mentally. Yeah. And she's always that way. And so, I mean, she's the light of our family. Mm-hmm. But like I didn't have that experience of like growing up with her that way. And so finally one day when I was 14, I remember like, or maybe 15, I remember just thinking, oh wait, I have another sister. So then I started, because my sister, she was younger, and I babysat all the time, and so I kind of just saw my younger siblings as mm-hmm. And then when I was like 15, 16, I think I finally realized I can have a relationship with them. And so then that changed. But
right.
Yeah, we're all like best friends now.
That's cool. So, well, my sorry, guilty pleasure. Anyway. No, it's cool. This is our podcast. We do what we want. So my guilty pleasure is chocolate covered coffee beans.
Oh.
So on my way to Pastor's Live last weekend, I stopped in the middle of Missouri in this town called, now some people call it Uranus, but it's more fun to call it Uranus, because they have this chocolate shop there just off the highway. And so I'm like, I have to. I cannot pass this up. So I stopped in, and they sell fudge there, but then they also sell, they have like a ton of like taffy too, like just bins and bins of it. But they also have the like chocolate covered items.
Everything.
Yeah, a ton of things. And so one of the things that I got was chocolate-covered coffee beans. And so I was eating through the remainder of my chocolates from Uranus. And I was like, oh yeah, I had coffee beans. These are awesome. So yeah, my sisters and I would get those when we were teenagers a lot, and we would eat chocolate covered coffee beans and like jump on the furniture. So yeah. Brings back good memories.
Those are also delicious in cookies. So if you ever just make regular chocolate chip cookies, but then use the chocolate covered coffee beans instead of just chocolate chips.
Delicious. Oh my goodness. Mm-hmm. That sounds amazing. And I've eaten them all, but I'm sure that there are places here in town that I can go and get some more. Well, cool. So let's get into the unraveling. So the subject that we've decided to talk about today is women pastors or female pastors. And having Janet on today is a pretty interesting situation because Amanda and I both grew up in, well, I started off for about 7 years of my life in a very conservative church, and Amanda longer than that. And Janet started off or went to a church that was not quite the same as we did. So we had a different, completely different situation. So who wants to kind of start on their experience, I guess. I mean, should we go ahead, Amanda?
Oh, I was gonna say, and we talked about this, you know, when we were planning a couple of days ago. I think it's really good that we have a positive example to talk about today.
Absolutely.
From Jan's experience, because like, I mean, obviously, I don't think it's wrong to talk about things that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Need to be, you know, critiqued. You know, I don't think it's wrong to critique right. things that need to be critiqued or talk about things that make us frustrated or even rant or mm-hmm. swear or whatever. But like, I don't want to, for me personally, it's really easy to get stuck in a negativity rut.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
So I'm really glad that we have a positive story, like a positive really. Example from to talk about today from Janet's perspective.
Yeah, sure.
Because, I mean, this is such an important topic. It really can shape who we are as people, who, I mean, any Christian that you meet, any person of faith that you meet, if they grew up in an environment of faith, or really any environment, how women are viewed in leadership, or even if they're allowed to have leadership, that has such an impact on how you live your life.
Mm-hmm. And, absolutely.
And how you view the world. And, it's so important to talk about. And I'm glad we're talking about it sooner rather than later here on our podcast.
And I will say, I think we can probably let Janet talk most because everyone's pretty much heard Amanda's and my stories already from the beginning, and we'll add some more in. But so Janet, a lot of us in the pub grew up in churches that men were the leaders of the churches.
Yeah.
And women were not allowed to be pastors, sometimes not even allowed to be in leadership at all, especially if it had to do with leading men. What kind of church did you grow up in? What was the situation there?
Well, to say, maybe I didn't, my early years, I don't think I grew up in a church. So when my mom and my dad divorced, I was about 7. And my mom didn't take us to church like every Sunday, me and my sister. But every summer we would go visit my mom's family in South Carolina. And so my grandmother, my aunt, all my cousins, all of them went to church. So it's kind of like every summer I was a Christian. And then I would come back home for the school year. And I was like, yeah, you know, I'm a Christian, but we didn't really live it going to church. But when I was 13, my aunt's church started a school. So I told my grandmother, it was just like, she told me that the church started a school and I looked at her and I said, I want to go. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go to that school. So however we can make this happen, I want to go to that school. Mm, and cool. I don't really know like what pushed me into going to that school. I mean, unless you'd say that I was led by the Spirit to go, but she said, okay, of course I'll pray about it and see what the Lord says. And if he's fine with it, then you can come live with me in South Carolina and go to school. So long story short, she prayed, he said yes. So I moved in with her and went to the school that my aunt's church started.
Where were you coming from? So before that,
so
you
moved to South Carolina. Yep, I was living in Northern Virginia with my mom.
Okay.
And all of her family's from South Carolina, so I just moved from my mom's house in with my grandmother in South Carolina. So I just moved from my mom to family in South Carolina, mm-hmm. just to go to the school.
Yeah, wow.
And it was, so it's kind of different. My grandmother, our family history is in the Huguenot Church in Charleston, South Carolina. So we have a lot of like that super like historical, even when it comes to the city of Charleston and religion, as far as what Christianity, you know, is, and that maybe typical, honestly, you know, white Christian Southern woman, like that is our grandmother.
Oh,
and
okay.
then, yeah, so, but my aunt is definitely more of the non-denominational Christian faith, where it's basically, if the Bible says it, that's what we're focusing on. And so that's the school and the church that I had gone to with them. So we were, once I made the decision to move down there, so being about 14 years old, it was, okay, now I'm kind of making this decision to be a Christian. I'm going to the school. It was basically church 6 days a week. The only time we didn't go to church or have church was on Saturdays. But even then, most likely, I was with the people I went to church and school with anyway. So it was really just a dive right in. And going from summertime church to church 6 days a week. But I think it gave me the large family that I didn't have. Like, it was just me and my sister, but she's 5 years older. So as soon as she could move out, she kind of did. But mm-hmm. she actually used to be really involved in the church, like youth leader, going to like all the youth camps and Acquire the Fire ministries. Like, she was super into it.
Oh, yeah, I remember all of that.
She actually had this moment of maybe a not mystical experience. Like, Science Mike talks about, he had the mystical experience seeing God in the waves. My sister, I think, from what I remember her telling me, saw a lack of God moving in her.
Huh.
So that moment for her, I think, was kind of like, oh, hey, like, maybe this isn't what I want. This isn't what I believe. I don't think this is real anymore. So she kind of left, really, the church. So then, being my age, this is before I moved to South Carolina. So for me, that was like, okay, well, my sister doesn't really believe it. So that wasn't really pressure for me to be too involved. Until the church started or the school started. And it was like, I think it was more so I just wanted to be with my cousins. If summer was great with them, then school is going to be great with them. Mm-hmm. So my aunt taught at the school, and my youngest cousin went to the school and lived with my grandmother, went to this new school, and it was like a family. It was, when I say it's a tiny school, we might have had the most number of students we had in 1 year, I think, was 12. And I was,
whoa, yeah.
For the whole school or for one grade?
No, for the whole school.
Wow.
Yeah.
My dad went to a Chinese school, but like, he graduated with 48 people. Like, that's how many people were in his class.
No. So my graduating class was me.
Nice.
And my graduation was, we rented out like a banquet room in a Holiday Inn. entire school was there. So it was all the kids that I had gone to church with over the summer, they went to school there. Mm-hmm. So I was the oldest every single year that I had gone there. So at 14, like, the youngest was the pastor's daughter, and I think she was 10. So, I mean, I was everybody's big sister, going from being the youngest, and then my sister moved out, and kind of having that only child set up with just me and my mom, and then moving into my grandmother's house. Like, I had an extended family of all these little kids are like my little brothers and sisters. And then I had my aunt there and then my cousins. But what was really interesting is what I think not confuses me, but really surprises me, is when people say women weren't allowed to leave their church, because mm-hmm. my entire church and school was women.
Yeah.
So the church itself was led by a female pastor, my pastor Betty, and then her daughter was the assistant pastor. So I had Pastor Wanda, and then her daughter went to my school, And then we had actually, and I'm going to give shout outs because I love absolutely all of them. These women were so instrumental to me becoming who I am. And I'll even I'm not super close to them now, but I'll send like a message on Facebook. Shout out to Miss Michelle, if you're listening, that they are such a huge impact on what I am now in almost every aspect of my life. Mm-hmm. So we had Betty, Wanda, three Michelles, a Ruth, Joyce, like these women led everything. And we had men in the congregation, but it's like our music minister, woman, our youth minister, woman, our head minister, pastor, woman. We had associate pastors that would come in and like do guest sermons or whatever for events, woman. Uh-huh. So so when you say that women weren't allowed to lead or weren't allowed to lead men, my first question is why?
Yeah.
Yeah. or maybe what scripture were you taught from that your leaders kind of sat on to say, yeah, this is why women can't lead.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you think
also a lot of how it's interpreted too.
Oh yeah.
Do you think it was intentional that all of the pastors, like even the pastors who came in to guest preach, that they were women too? Do you think that was intentional or just how the circumstances worked out? Or do you even know?
Yeah, no, I was thinking about this and it's like, how much do I remember and then how much am I filling in the blanks?
Yeah,
because true. I mean, so I think we all have some sort of like deconstruction story. And for me, it was maybe some more blurb about just kind of my experience. In school, even though there's good and bad, I absolutely am so in love and thankful for everything that I experienced while I was in school. However, with that said, there were some things that led me to really understand that religion, that is Christianity, doesn't fit well with me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, kind of that we were always taught, you're fearfully and wonderfully made. If that's the case, then however I understand God must be right, because that's how he fearfully and wonderfully made me to understand him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I mean, I would ask questions and I was always curious, and it was never a throw it in their face to be disrespectful. It was more of a, I'm always the kid. Why is that? Why? So I just wanted to know. I was so curious. But those questions were met with either being told to be quiet, or that's rebellion speaking. So any question that was really sort of that could have been viewed as an affront or attack was viewed that way. And automatically it would have been from the enemy that I was thinking or questioning this. So it was when I got to college that I actually too had an experience similar to my sister's where I was in the sanctuary and I was living with my friend for a while and she was at work. So instead of going home just to come pick her up again and go back home, I just stayed at the school. And I'm in the sanctuary and I'm praying and I have music on. It's typical praise and worship. And I ask God, you know, I feel like I seek you every day and I feel like I'm so in love with you. And I feel like, you know, everything that you've called us to do as Christians, like I feel like I'm giving myself. So really anything you want to show me to not prove that you're real, but just sort of like my hand is out and open for you, even if you just touch the palm of my hand, like just come meet me halfway, just a little bit.
Yeah.
And it was dead silent. I didn't hear anything. I didn't smell anything. I didn't feel anything, like nothing. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of like, okay, this is obviously not how I experience God. This Christianity of what I'm being taught is not how I experience God. So I definitely held that to myself, but it wasn't until I got to college and took a world religion class that I really started to open up and understand that there's all these religions to be able to understand God. Find the one that really fits with you. So now I would say I'm more of an omnist, that all religions are correct because that's how you are able to understand this thing that is greater. So to kind of go back, the church itself was founded or set up by a man. So my assistant pastor, Wanda, her husband helped establish the church. Uh-huh. Their relationship ended. They ended up getting a divorce. But when he established the church, he put his mother-in-law as the pastor. So Pastor Betty was the pastor that of the church that he set up. Okay. So it was never a thing where it's like, it. And actually, I kind of think my family or my grandmother had like that negative side of it that she didn't agree that women should be running the church. But I didn't go to her church, so I didn't really hear that as mm-hmm. basis for or understanding of why. So I don't think it was a sense of, you know, nothing in the sense that it was men are bad or that we are better than men or mm-hmm. we only want women. It was a kind of a mix of we networked and we had this little community. I mean, we were a tiny church, a tiny school. So if we're going to these other churches just for visits or if they had seminars or what have you, we just networked. And if there was a female pastor there and they wanted to come speak at our church, that's fine too. Mm-hmm. So, and plus all of these lifelong relationships that our pastors had set up, it was, oh, you're a pastor at your own church now. Why don't you come speak at our church? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Go ahead.
It's more of how it just started out that way. And then because the women who were already there networked with other women pastors, that's just how that happened. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's cool.
Sure. And so we had one of our guest pastors who was a woman, her husband was a pastor and he was more than welcome to, you know, preach or give a word if the Lord had led him to. So it was really, you know, even as far down as the children. So we would have the kids like take over Sunday, and whether you were the 10-year-old girl or the 15-year-old boy or the 9-year-old boy, like if you have a word that you feel the Lord is telling you that you need to share with the people, mm-hmm. here's the microphone, get on up there. Mm-hmm. It was very inclusive, I guess, with age and then with women as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It sounds like it was a real community that really revolved around like people actually being part of each other's lives in a mm-hmm. real way, not just like it was. I mean, not that I didn't have community growing up at the church I went to, but we didn't go to that church for the church because that's where we were going to hear, you know, the word of God mm-hmm. wrong. Because mm-hmm. it was like the focus was solely on like doctrine, accurate doctrine was mm-hmm. you know, put above everything else, and so like we were able to find community within that, but mm-hmm. the community wasn't the point.
Oh yeah.
And it sounds like what you community that was the point.
It was, yeah. Like even so much that whoever I saw at school was who I saw at church, and of course there were some kids that didn't go to the school. But we were so close as, like, we were just all each other's extended family. So, like, Pastor Betty was, you know, grandmother. And then Pastor Wanda was, like, another mom. And then her daughter, Evangeline, was my sister. So it was really, I even, like, babysat over the summer the kids that I had gone to school with. So we were just so close. Yeah. Everything shared really just a community of living. In mm-hmm. this together.
That's very so cool. Beautiful. Yeah. Like, so like, do you think, I mean, this is, sorry, go ahead, Becky.
No, it's okay. I think your idea is probably more well-formed than mine was going to be. Go ahead.
Well, hold your thought then. Yeah. I was going to ask, so like, I've noticed in the pub when we like talk about and debate your different theological ideas, you, Janet, have always seemed to me to be more like, does that peace with your questions mm-hmm. and or even with what you do believe or things you don't know what you believe, like you just always seemed more confident, more at peace, less conflicted, I guess.
Yeah.
Do you think that it seems to me that having grown up in a community like that where it was so healthy, mm-hmm. like even if there's things obviously that you don't agree with like doctrinally anymore, mm-hmm. like just the fact that that community didn't revolve around the doctrine, that it revolved around community, that it gave you a much healthier place to jump to questions from. It's just a better foundation for yourself as a person.
No.
Question.
Oh, okay.
Really?
Okay,
I'm off then.
Explain that, Janet.
So in, well, because I asked so many questions, it was a community, but it was still a structured community. So any question I asked that might sound like it was against God's word was shut down. Mm-hmm. So I never felt free to explore that part of myself or explore all these questions that I had. It was very much like, yeah, sure, we're brothers and sisters and aunts and uncles and mothers and fathers all to each other, but there's still a place that you sit in, and there's still, you know, things that need to be followed. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't until, and really I would say kind of that environment, like it was very good and bad. I wouldn't change any of it just because of how much I sort of received that was good from it. But
yeah,
I would say the bad was what made me question so much of myself. Like if God is saying truly that, or if I'm told that God is saying homosexuality is wrong, then why do I feel like it's okay that you're attracted to people regardless of their bodies? You know, like if, like, I just didn't understand that if this, they used to always say, like, does it sit right with your spirit? That's how you could tell if something was good or evil. Does it sit right with your spirit? And then it was like, well, all of these things that you're telling me are wrong actually sit right with my spirit. So, oh, that was very conflicting for me. But it wasn't until I took that world religion class and I learned about all these other ways to understand and seek truth, you know, capital T, whatever truth is, that's when I started to be more confident in myself, I would say.
Kids going off and get that liberal education.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, that I think college was also a place where the cracks started to develop in what I was raised with. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, same.
And I say the cracks started to develop because it wasn't just that. It was many other things throughout my life. And I mean, let's see here. It probably took about 15 years for me to finally decide that, like, I was going to, like, I haven't left Christianity behind, but that I was getting rid of the oppressiveness that I grew up with. And that I was, and that I could be okay in knowing that I wasn't outside of God, really, by not buying into everything that was fed to me as a kid.
Yeah. So that's kind of...
I find it so interesting.
Go ahead.
Sorry. No, you go ahead.
We're all about talking over each other tonight.
Yeah, right. Well, I was just going to say, like, kind of to go along with that, one thing that they would say is that, like, the Bible is the only way, and the only way to get to God is through Jesus, and Jesus said this, so God's love is unconditional if you follow these conditions.
Uh-huh.
And I never understood that, because if you're telling me that we're made the way we are, beautifully and wonderfully and fearfully, the diversity of life alone, you know, from the three of us right now to not only physical characteristics, but personalities and the way our minds think. It's like, how, with the beautifully diverse nature of the entire world, all of creation that God created is what you're telling me, how is it then wrong that I understand him or God this way? How is it wrong that I view all of creation this way? Like that, those two things just, where it's such, you know, a juxtaposition for each other, like, I could not reconcile that.
And I think that is probably very similar to what Amanda and I grew up with. So the difference, I mean, is that we grew up in situations where women were not leading in the church, but well, I started off with, like, I can get more into the changes that happened later on, but but what you just said about, like, this is the only way, that is something that persisted quite a while, and that's something that also was in my tradition, and I'm pretty sure with Amanda's too.
Yeah. I was just thinking, because, like, it's so interesting that you grew up, when it comes to, like, how your church approached the Bible, mm-hmm. like, I think all three of us had similar experiences, but there's that one thing that's just so different between you. And, like, just, it's boggling my mind that was just not a question. I mean, I think it's wonderful. It's wonderful that just wasn't a question. Like, of course women can be pastors. Of course women can lead. Like,
go ahead. What's your question, Janet?
Well, I was just going to ask, like, I almost had to, like, research back so that I made sure I had everything that I was thinking correctly, but sort of what scripture did they really base that off of, that women can't lead, or it's what?
Paul? I can answer that. I was looking it up earlier today because I knew I heard it all the time. Mm-hmm. So, and it just as a caveat to this, one thing that's so hard with talking to people who are from the tradition that I grew up in, where doctrine, I mean, so I grew up basically where the Bible was my idol. Mm-hmm. Like, I worshipped the Bible. Mm-hmm. I didn't worship God. I didn't realize that. I didn't know that's what I was doing. I didn't know that's how I was being led. But that is the reality of what was going on.
To this day, I struggle with calling the Bible the Word of God, too.
Yeah. Like,
it's so ingrained in me. Mm-hmm. And I guess we can talk about that on another podcast, why I don't believe that anymore. But yes. Continue.
But I know it's kind of related, because it's like, it's so hard to talk to people from that tradition who believe women shouldn't be pastors based on these verses. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple. I just found, like, a blog where there's someone, like, writing out all the arguments that people have for women being pastors, and then he's providing a biblical response to why that's not so. And so, of course, the main verse that is used is 1 Timothy 2:11-12, and so it's the verse where Paul says, a woman should learn in quietness and full submission. I do not permit a woman to teach or to have authority over a man. She must be silent.
And that was his letter to a church, right?
Yeah. Correct.
Oh, his letter. Okay.
To Timothy, so, specifically as a pastor.
Yes. Yeah.
Of a church.
Like, cultural arguments, both for, like, explaining why this is unequivocal to all churches today and why it isn't unequivocal to us today in our culture. There's so many different arguments out there. You can research till you're blue in the face.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, for me, what it comes down to, like what you were talking about, Janet, is that it just doesn't make sense. And I know that that's not going to be something that will hold with anyone from the tradition that I'm from, because your heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. You can't trust what you feel. It's so hard, because, like, I want to talk about this in a way, like, I wish I could say, biblically, you can prove that women can be pastors just as much as men. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, if you look at the Bible the way a lot of people look at the Bible, it's the inerrant, perfect Word of God. You can't do that biblically. It's not possible. But what it comes down to is that I know for me, I'm not gonna, I mean, I know you two agree, but I can't speak for you, but, like, I don't see the Bible the same way I used to. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that applies to us today, any more than I believe that the first two chapters of Genesis are an accurate depiction of how the world began.
Right.
Or how the universe began.
Yeah.
And it's just, you have to, and I think it's so messed up that we approach at least the traditions we came from, we approach everything as doctrine first instead of people first.
Yes, yeah.
And if you approach, and I mean, that's what Jesus did. Jesus approached people first. He used doctrine. He used doctrine to argue with people who would only listen to doctrine, but he also wasn't arguing with them to convince them. He's arguing with them to show them the holes in their faith, and the holes always come down to them not loving people. That's right. Always the hole that he points out.
Is yes, that they're not loving people.
And so, that's all.
It's all about love, people. It's all about love.
And so that's all we can really do. Like, I can't, someone who believes women can't talk in church. I mean, and I have family members that believe that. And they're not bad people. They're not. Right. Like, it's my immediate family. They believe that. I understand why they believe that. They're still some of the most loving, amazing people I know. And they're not part of the tradition I grew up in anymore. Like, they're in tradition. They're in a different tradition that is very, very, very strict. Very, you know, they follow the Bible, but they don't worship doctrine.
Yeah,
they worship God, and that makes such a huge difference. So even though I disagree with them on how they interpret this, that doesn't impact my ability to fellowship with them, and it doesn't impact their ability to fellowship with me. And honestly, that's what it comes down to. It's like, if you are holding onto a doctrine so strongly that it prevents you from being able to give grace to somebody who disagrees with you, you have a problem with how you're viewing doctrine.
Right. Yeah. So if that's your position, then what really are you worshiping?
Yeah.
Like, a thing that, a concept that helped me with this whole idea is that, if you look back into the context of the churches that Paul was writing to, what he was telling them and what Jesus was telling the Hebrews at the time, or the Jews at the time, is that what he was telling them to do was actually more progressive than what was being done.
Exactly.
And so, like, oh man, what was I listening to just the other day that was talking about? They're talking about this specifically, and they said it was a revolutionary idea for women even to learn. Like, so Paul saying women should learn in quiet submission was saying women should learn like men. So boys in school would be learning in quiet submission to their rabbi or to their teacher. So what Paul was saying, it was not that women should be quiet because they don't have authority or they don't have intelligence or whatever that is that people are interpreting it as. He was saying women should learn like men do. And which is revolutionary. Exactly. And what was, there's another one. Oh yeah. So that, and also going back to the Old Testament, where they're talking about like an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, like, and like now we're like, oh my gosh, that's like so violent. Even that was progressive too, because at the time you could, if someone killed your family member, you could go and kill their whole family and them, like, and so what was being said here was no, you, one for one. Not 50 for one. So that was really reining it in, not saying, oh, you can go and be violent. It was saying, no, don't be as violent as you are going to be.
It's just, and it's just, it's, and again, it just, hearing these verses, reading these verses, and I don't read the New Testament very often anymore, just because I still hear the voice of the man that was my pastor for, you know, 18 years, 19 years in my head, whenever I, especially when I read Paul, because that's pretty much all he taught from was Paul. And so I hear his voice as Paul's voice. And like I never, like, he even had, I mean, we read John, we read the Gospel of John, but there's no reason to read Matthew, Mark, or Luke, because everything is in John. What's the point of, I mean, no one ever said that verbally over the pulpit. But that's the message I got, because I've never read Matthew all the way through. I've never been taught Matthew all the way through. I don't think we ever opened the Bible to Mark during a sermon ever. And the only time we looked at Luke was when he was comparing the different crucifixion stories or the different, you know, Christmas stories. Like, that's the only time. And so it's just, it's hard for me to read the New Testament, but whenever I do, it's just amazing how I feel almost like the gears switching in my mind. I'm like, okay, I'm understanding this differently now, and it's getting new meaning, and it's just, it's just like, it doesn't have the same hold on me, and mm-hmm. hold by like a negative way, not like a hole where I'm holding onto this in hope, but like an iron grip on mm-hmm. on my identity. I used to have such an iron grip on my identity, and
right,
and that's why it's still hard for me to read it, I think, but when I do read it, it's really good for me to feel those, that mm-hmm. changing, that shifting.
Yeah,
Luke is amazing. So like, I did a like a 9-month long Bible study at my church back a few months ago. Like, I mean, it finished, well, I guess it's finished like 9 months ago now. It's been a little bit, but maybe 6 months. But it's like each of the Gospels kind of have a theme to them. Mm-hmm. And Luke's Gospel, the theme in this Bible study was the least, the last, and the lost. And so Luke has a lot of parables, and Jesus is talking about how to treat the least, the last, and the lost. Like mm-hmm. going out and being the spirit of God in the world. Luke is amazing. I hope you can get back into it. But I struggle with Christians taking Paul's word as gospel more than Jesus's word as gospel. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I think a lot of the issues come down to that, because the verse that is cited for women not being able to lead in a church is Paul. I think he...
Not Jesus.
Not Jesus. Yeah. No, not Jesus at all. Yeah. But the ironic thing about it is that Paul also... highlights women who were apostles and yep. who were church leaders mm-hmm. and who were missionaries and who were co-workers of his. I mean, mm-hmm. You have to ignore some things to make it work. Mm-hmm. And take some things literally and then just ignore some other things. Like, literally to our context today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So...
And it's probably a work in progress, too. It's like...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we're human. Every time we go back to any sort of scripture, I mean, we can't change the fact that we're seeing it through our own cultural lens. Mm-hmm. I think the point isn't removing our cultural lens or trying to. I think... The point is acknowledging that we have it and accepting that, oh my God, maybe the Holy Spirit is going to show us something regardless if we're looking at it perfectly or not. How about that? I mean, novel idea. Maybe we all have brains.
Right.
Yeah. So, sorry, you were saying.
No, it's cool. I thought I'd share a little bit of my experience with women pastors, because I grew up in the Church of Christ, or at least like the first 7 years or so. My mom grew up in the Church of Christ too, and so that's why we were there. And there, like, it's complete, like, women are not allowed to have any authority over men, adult men. So like, once he turns 18, then a woman can't have authority over him. Mm-hmm. If he's under 18, it's cool. But
oh my God.
It's down to, yeah, I know, right? It's like, okay.
Because 16-year-old boys don't struggle with hormones.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And so...
Or 16-year-old girls, for that matter.
Right, anyway. Yeah. But then we moved to the Church of the Nazarene when I was 7. And the Nazarene Church has been... So it's been... called the Nazarene Church since 1908, when a few different churches merged. And from that time, women were ordained as pastors just as much. Pastors, deacons, were allowed to be missionaries, whatever, just as much as men were. Now, they culturally, like general culture, not as many were, because not as many just felt able to, you know, just even culturally. Yeah. But in the church, it was okay. And to this day, like, there's still fewer than 20% of the ordained ministers in the Church of the Nazarene are women. We're still working through getting more parity in that. I think most denominations who do ordain women are still trying to get gender parity. I'm proud to be part of a church that has done that from the beginning. Even, let's see, 2 years ago, one of my good friends was ordained at our district assembly. And last year, another friend, two of my good friends 2 years ago, they're a husband and wife pair. So they were both ordained at the same time. And then last year, another female friend of mine was ordained. And it's really cool to see that happening. The lady who 2 years ago was ordained alongside her husband. And it was not because of her husband. She, like, it was on her own merit. They just finished, like, all the coursework to be able to do it at the same time. Or they, like, I don't know exactly. I'd have to ask them if they, like, one finished earlier and then waited until the other one could. I'm not sure. They're just really cute like that. But she has a podcast that she does. So, I mean, I might plug hers too, but most of you might not care because it's about young Nazarene pastors and their mentors. So, but she interviews like millennial-ish pastors. So like anywhere from 22 to about 40. And what their ministry is, ask them what their ministry is like, how they grew up and such like that. And then she also has interviewed a few mentors too of these young Nazarene clergy. And it's one of the other podcasts I listen to that I really like, but she's local here.
What's the name of the podcast?
It's called This Nazarene Life. Okay. So it was, she tries to, her inspiration is kind of This American Life, but it's Nazarene Life. She's just really cute. Her name's Britt Bowler Jack. She's awesome.
That's really cool. I'll define it. That sounds really interesting.
Yeah. So This Nazarene Life is another podcast that if you want to hear about young Nazarene pastors, she's had, I think she's had around 30 episodes or so, 20 or 30 episodes. And probably I can think of about maybe a quarter to a third of those have been women. So it's pretty cool.
That is cool. And that's a high number for our culture.
Yeah. Of course, she was one of them, too. I mean, she, one of the associate pastors at our church who's helping her out with the podcast, too, kind of in the background, he interviewed her for her own podcast. So,
nice.
So she's been interviewed, too.
Yeah. Kind of like what we did.
Yeah, exactly. So any closing words, or Amanda, did you want to say any more about your experience, or are we good to go?
I just think this is going to be a continuing conversation.
Oh yeah.
I'm sure we'll have to come back to this later. I'm sure Callie has her own stories to share, and I think it'd be really good to talk to more people who either were under female pastors or who are female pastors. And their experiences, because it's just, I hope someday when you hear the word pastor, you don't automatically think male.
Yeah.
I know, right. I still struggle with that. Mm-hmm. I still struggle with that. Like, even Janet today, when you were talking about that one of your fellow students was the daughter of the pastor, I automatically assumed that you're talking about a guy. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, wait, no. Stop. So it's just, it's so ingrained in us that we just automatically think man when you think of pastor. And and I do think that I would like to dive more into eventually the whole doctrine side of it, and just like why it is that we feel that we can say yes, we honor the Bible as scripture, and we value the Bible as scripture, but we still take things like that First Timothy passage with a grain of salt is just, I mean, that could be like even just a whole different topic just about how to read the, how we read the Bible. There's just so many questions still, and like, we're not going to answer everything. And I think for me, I was struggling before this episode, like, we're going to have to prove why women can be pastors. And like, no, that's not what we're doing here.
Yeah.
And I just think it's good though, to hear your story, Janet, and how it's how formative that experience was for you.
Yeah.
And it's also just really encouraging to hear that not everyone in our generation experienced the same kind of oppression.
Yeah.
Right.
So when you mentioned, like, it's almost like it was, of course, women can be pastors because women are humans and God created humans.
Right,
so, so in our church, and even in our school, like, we really dived into the history of each book of the Bible. So anytime we studied it, like, so with Paul's letters to the churches, we studied the context and the time frame that it was written in and who he was writing to. Also, I noticed that we spent a lot of time on understanding the qualities of God and like being, you know, we stand with Israel, so we wanted to know everything like the Jewish nation knew about God. So we would study like Hebrew scripture and text. So all of the names that God is, as far as like Jehovah Nisi and Jehovah Rapha, like all of these things are his qualities. So if we're made in his image, then we possess those qualities too. And like, I remember being taught this, that if God is love and if God is a protector and if God is like a safe harbor and a refuge for people to come to, and if God is also a leader and someone who will, you know, gently discipline or help guide you in the way that you were to go, what does a mother do?
Yes.
All of those things.
Yes.
All
yes.
of those
things. Exactly. Yes.
Boom.
So it was kind of like they separated it out into, like, if an apostle just kind of like establishes the church and then the pastor is the one who nurtures the people who are a part of that church, a mother is a nurturer. So why wouldn't a pastor be a woman? If a mother is a woman. So, I mean, I would say that the female, you know, feminine qualities, there are some qualities that are distinct to being feminine, and there are some qualities that are distinct to being masculine. Mm-hmm. So if God can possess both of those things, then both of those things can work through us who are created in his image. And if that means a woman is standing at the altar or a man is, you are receiving qualities of God, and God encompasses both because he created both.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. Both are part of the image of God.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And we oh, go ahead.
If you are suppressing one of them, you're suppressing part of the image of
God. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh my God. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And so we like really dived into the Trinity as well. Like that's one teaching that you could stand on to say, like, when you think about the Trinity, like we identified God as, you know, the head of them all, the creator, the point of being that Jesus then comes through. But Jesus is, you know, the lover of your soul, and he is your safe harbor and your comfort. And like, it's almost like Jesus is mom in that sense, when you think about what your mom is. And then you have the Holy Spirit that is just like wisdom and direction and higher consciousness and guidance. So all of these things, if God is all of them and you're created by God, you too are all of them. Mm. And that's one thing that my teacher really taught us in school, that I remember it so clearly because my aunt was one of the Bible teachers in the school, and she wanted to teach us about just really kind of listening to ourselves and understanding, like, you know, in relation to make your spirit stronger, which is, you know, you might have to deny these parts of yourself, that's the flesh. So she read that scripture about your heart being evil and wicked. And my teacher just stopped her and was like, I want to be very clear that your heart was like, God had his hands on your heart when he made you. So in no way are you evil. In no way.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so... To hear that, like, I never considered, you know, that I couldn't do something because God created me and God did that. So it only made sense that God's creation was following his footsteps to do these things.
Yeah.
Well, wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
That is great. The way I was about to say that sounded dismissive, and that's not what I mean at all. but I think we could continue to go on if we did. So we probably need to cut it here.
Sure.
So
agreed.
Thank you, Janet, so much for coming and talking to us and sharing your story. We have now our woman-splaining section, which fits very well in with what we were just talking about. We had a pub friend of ours. Was it Brian? I don't remember who it was.
I'm trying to remember. Yes, it was Brian. Yeah,
it was Brian Odine.
I think so. Okay. Let me pull up the tweet.
Okay. We had a pub friend who tweeted at us about. I don't think it was, I don't know, he may have said woman-splaining. He probably did. Anyway, I don't know. Becky's brain is still on a cold, so. So his question was, explain the Proverbs 31 woman. Because we mentioned it in our podcast last time. And so.
Oh, what? Here it is. Oh, wait, sorry. It wasn't Brian, actually.
Oh, it was Brian.
It was Rusty Krim at @OB_Krim_Kenobi.
Oh, okay. So someone completely different. Sorry, Rusty.
No.
So
sorry, Brian, for putting words in your mouth. So he said, at Twisted Sisters, I am loving the podcast, been needing some non-white dude theology for a while. Hashtag womansplain 31, Proverbs 31 next time.
Absolutely.
So yes, we can do that.
So, my view of the Proverbs 31 woman, until I read a Rachel Evans book called, A Year of Biblical Womanhood, I believe is what it's called, was that the perfect woman is supposed to invest money and make money for the family, and she's supposed to... make her kids' clothing and supposed to have a good reputation in the community and literally pretty much do everything for the family, including keeping her husband's reputation clean too. And that just seemed so impossible. And it is impossible. Wow. I don't think a human person can do that. What about you girls before I go on and say what my view is now of it?
I kind of froze there. I didn't realize that you were talking. Okay. I think for me, like, I only read it a couple times growing up. Because it always made me uncomfortable. Because I always felt so. I always felt so much shame.
Yeah.
Because just even as a teenager, I just like, I'm not those things. I was like, I don't know how I can be those things. This is a different topic entirely, but just the way I was raised, I really struggle with self-regulation and just being responsible and. Is something that I feel like it will always be a lifelong struggle for me, and I'm only just trying to kind of grapple with with it and why I'm that way. And also, like, I also compared her to the women that I knew, and I didn't see that. Not that I didn't believe that my mom was a strong woman or that I didn't admire her, that I didn't want to be like her, but we struggled financially. We didn't have the option to not. She, Mama, didn't have the option to not be afraid of snow for her household. For her household is clothed in scarlet. You know, I was like, why? What does that have to do with her value? I think it'd be interesting to look at this verse in the cultural context, because I think it was intended to be something very honoring, to women.
Yeah.
But when you interpret it through today's lenses as something like, this is a prescription to how, this is the only way to be a real valued, you know, Christian woman, I think that's where the problem comes in, because then it's becoming, you know, a way to shame and guilt people.
Wow.
And so, I just, it makes me feel icky when I read it.
Yeah. So in our school, and in our church, you might guess that it was practically the complete opposite.
Right.
Yes.
In that, to be a P31, it is no way at all a command to a woman that they must be these things for a man. And they read it more as sort of like a doting father to his daughter, and that, you know, God is singing this to you, that this is your potential. Like, you are such a blessing to this earth, and who you touch and who you are partnered with and the children that you'll have and the city that you live in and everything that you do, like, your potential is to be a blessing and loved and honored. But then on the same side, like in school, when we would learn that, my teacher would break it down, like, you know, girls, to be a P31, like, this is what you are. Like, this is your potential to realize, and it is beautiful. You are beautiful. But then to the boys in school, it was, this is, you know, when you find a wife and when you're partnered, this is what God is giving you. You need to be deserving of it. And so it was a charge to the boys, like, you need to, like, love them. You are to respect your wives. You are to love your wives. You're to, you know, if she is all these things to you and the family that she gives you, you better be deserving of it. And it really put that charge on them to, you know, sort of step it up, in a sense.
Yeah. And so in Rachel Held Evans' book, that's more how she discovered that it was. She spoke to Jewish women and asked them about it and how they read it. And it is, to them, it's more of a love song from a husband to a wife.
Yeah.
He's calling her a woman of valor. I'm going to totally butcher this, but the Hebrew phrase is Eshet Hayil. Means a woman of valor. And so this is, she's a blessing, and she, like, just like you said, like, you need to be up to the, you need to live up to her.
Like, yeah. This is,
yeah. And also, like, reading it now again, I'm just kind of going over it. I just pulled it up on my computer, and it's just like, when you look at it from, like, the context of time, like, even if you don't know, just think about any ancient culture, really, even if you don't know all that much about Jewish culture, like, just women didn't have human rights, you know, back then. But you read this, and this woman is a strong woman, who doesn't have to go to her husband for permission for anything that she does. She's making decisions. She is strong. She has power. She is, and it's not power for herself. It's power that she extends to people who don't have what she has. And I mean, the whole middle section is about what she does for other people, and it's not like, because that's the only way for her to be virtuous. Is she's
right?
Because she has strength, and she has power, and she's choosing to go give to others.
Yeah,
definitely.
And it's like a blessing. You're right. It's a blessing. It just, I think you have to read it that way.
Yeah.
Not in order for it to have any value.
Yeah.
You have to read it that way, not as something to put down on someone. This is who you have to be.
Right. Right. Yes. It's not read as a, you fall short, so here's your bar, live up to it. It's, it's, you know, like that. It's almost the praise of the woman that you are all these things. Rejoice in that.
Yes, exactly. So that's, I mean, that's how it is. That's not, I think, how it has been taught. Like, it wasn't until I was in my 30s that I read that book and thought, oh, so that's how it's supposed to be. I get it. So, well, cool. Thanks, ladies. So that was our woman-splaining section for this week.
Thanks, Rusty, for the question.
Yes, thank you, Rusty. So now we'll go into feedback. We had no 5-star reviews on iTunes. What are you doing? it's cool. Whatevs, I guess.
Whatever. We're sure you were busy.
Yeah. That's it.
But we do have some tweets. We got, I think some churches are dicks, actually got a bit of response.
We got a lot of feedback.
Yeah. Our friend Beck Ray, who's in the pub with us, she tweeted out, Twisted Sister's latest episode got me happy at the mention of Australian TV because she's from Australia. Oh. She said, hey from down under, # what's that Australian one, and # some churches are dicks. And she included a GIF of Miss Fisher, who we mentioned, and it says, yes. Intelligent women do have their uses, Inspector. And then Huff the Magic Dragon, Jen Huffman, I think it's Jen_Huffman, on Twitter. She said, Becky's advice to join pub is totally on point. It's the reason I'm not severely depressed today. # Aww. Some churches are dicks. Yeah. Mm. So sweet.
That was really sweet.
Yeah. And Barbara Gregory, at Ruby, on Twitter, she says, for the record, friend's pastor said, find a blue collar church because she didn't fit into their white collar.
Mm.
# some churches are dicks.
Yes.
So, and then Ray Guilford at Galactic Wonderlust with no Wonderlust with no vowels in it, tweeted # some churches are dicks. Just that. So, Mike McVeigh, who's a friend of mine, he's at Mike McVeigh on Twitter. He says, Twisted Sisters, yes, it's true that # some churches are dicks, but we have a chance every day to blue ball them, but only until it hurts. Yes. And then Mackenzie Oliver at The Leather Soup on Twitter, he said, at Twisted Sisters, # some churches are dicks, and it's up to them whether they allow themselves to change and get better. Mm-hmm. A stagnant church is dead.
Yeah.
Preach.
Wow.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm. And then the Corn Goblin, also known as Christopher, at the Iowa Hoosier, also known as Amanda's husband, he says, the pastor's wife left pretty... Oh, let's see. Let's try this one more time. The pastor's wife life pretty much sucks, usually, as I have observed it. Some churches are dicks. Mm-hmm. And he posted a Simpsons meme, and it says, being a pastor's wife be like, and I'll suppress the rage I'm feeling.
Oh, God.
Yes.
And then Man Has Ruined God, at Man Has Ruined God on Twitter, tweeted, at Twisted Sisters, # some churches are dicks. Love the podcast. So,
yeah, that was cool.
What we got.
And she's a new follow, too. I think she started following us after that episode. So
I think that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think she follows the guys, too, and then heard our episode and started following us. So,
yeah. She's got a cool Twitter feed. I like what she's doing about just kind of trying to show a different way to approach Christianity, kind of like the same way we are.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can catch us on Twitter. I'm at Becky Seville.
I am at Indwelt Daughter.
And I am at Walker J. Marie.
And you can get the Twisted Sisters at Twisted Sisters. And you can also find us in the pub, patreon.com/pastorspodcast. Donate $1 more. And that is our show today. So Amanda has our cultural... Oh, wait, sorry, man.
Oh, wait, hashtags.
What am I doing? Hashtags. Yes. Goodness. Okay. So, Janet, did you get hashtags written down?
I did one.
Okay, well, let's go for it. Our guests don't always, like, they're not... as practiced at this as we are.
Well, I'll even show you. So, like, I had
we're still practicing.
And I had my little section to write down all the hashtags.
Yay! Nice. That was so cute.
But I got sidetracked by chocolate, and so I just ended there.
Oh, well. So what did you get?
It was just hashtag chocolate covered everything.
Oh, yes. Okay. I have hashtag I meant Aztec. Hashtag you kind of know everyone's going to die. Yeah. Hashtag give it at least 6 months. Hashtag stalkerish on Instagram. Stalkerish. Yeah. Hashtag yoga accountability partner.
Oh, yeah.
Hashtag may not be a mystical experience. Hashtag my graduating class was me. Hashtag cool, you're a pastor. Hashtag give a word. Hashtag does it sit well with your spirit? Mm-hmm. Hashtag a biblical response. And hashtag because women are human.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Good. All right. I will go ahead and read Michael's.
Okay.
And he said, hashtag quite the situation.
I like that.
Hashtag. Hashtag probably almost stalkerish. Yes. Hashtag pub altar call. Hashtag too old for Snapchat.
Yes.
Hashtag chocolates from Uranus. And he's
chocolates from Uranus.
Hashtag from Uranus. Or chocolates.
Chocolates from Uranus.
And then hashtag typical white Christian Southern woman.
Mm-hmm.
Hashtag Betty Wanda Three Michelles.
I like that one.
Hashtag sit right with your spirit. And hashtag sidetracked by chocolate.
Yes.
Which I feel like that's probably all of us.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. Absolutely.
All right.
Someone, what did you
get? I have I have Becky Little Concoction. Hashtag come to the pub altar call. Hashtag, oh, I have another sister. Hashtag, chocolates from Uranus. Shout out to the women. Hashtag, Luke is amazing. Hashtag, the least, the last, and the lost.
Mm-hmm.
Hashtag, what does a mother do? Hashtag, women are human.
Mm-hmm.
Hashtag, thou shalt not suppress God.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
And hashtag sidetracked by chocolate.
Okay, so I like, what does a mother do? Thou shalt not suppress God. And something about pub altar call. I mean, any of those?
Yeah.
And Betty wanted like three Michelles.
Yeah, that one's also really funny.
What about you, girls?
Which ones do you like, Janet?
I had, so because women are human. And then
mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Betty wanted three Michelles. Shout out to my women, and then sidetracked by chocolate.
I think either the pub altar call or because women are human.
Let's do because women are human.
Yeah, it totally fits.
I like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that fits really well.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we can go on to hit us up on Twitter at Twisted Sisters with the hashtag because women are human, and make sure to tag the Twisted Sisters in your post, and we'll read it next time on our podcast. And thank you again, Janet, for joining us.
You're welcome.
Yes, this was awesome. Thank you for talking to us today.
Absolutely.
And Amanda is going to have our cultural input for this week.
All right. So today, I just wanted to find something that would kind of speak to me after the week that we've had since, I mean, it's been a week now, since the inauguration of President Cheeto. That's because I don't want to use his name. So this is What Kind of Times Are These by Adrienne Rich. She is a poet, and I really like this one, so I'm going to read it. What kind of times are these? There's a place between two stands of trees where the grass grows uphill and the old revolutionary road breaks off into shadows near a meeting house abandoned by the persecuted who disappeared into those shadows. I've walked there picking mushrooms at the edge of dread, but don't be fooled. This isn't a Russian poem. This is not somewhere else but here. our country moving closer to its own truth and dread, its own ways of making people disappear. I won't tell you where the place is, the dark mesh of the woods meeting the unmarked strip of light, ghost-ridden crossroads, leaf-mold paradise. I know already who wants to buy it, sell it, make it disappear. And I won't tell you where it is, so why do I tell you anything? Because you still listen, because in times like these, to have you listen at all, it's necessary to talk about trees.